Dr. Lutheran M. Carter IV, you're a full Korean naval guy, chief petty officer, and a driving force in intentional learning in the SoCal area. So, tell us, where does that fire come from?
So,
and can I call you for the audience? Can
me please,
and can we call you Luther please. As opposed
yes,
to
please.
The Lutheran Carter?
Please. You know, the only time I'm Dr. Carter is if I'm teaching a class, you know, but people that I work with, colleagues and things like that, you know, definitely, you know, it's Luther. Now, I will say this, you know, because I am still working with the Navy, for the most part, yes, the officers do call me Dr. Carter because to them, I'm like, hey, good morning, Commander. Good morning, Lieutenant. So, you know, we're going to both be formal. But no, please, Luther.
Awesome. And our co-chair along with you today is Heather Coons, one of the principals of DOL Coach. So, Heather.
And I love her already.
Hello, Angus and Luther. It is my pleasure to be with you guys today. I am not a doctor. However, I'm very smart and
yes, you are.
Sociable and capable of doing many things. And I love working with the team at DOL Coach, and I'm happy to be here, Angus. Thank you for the invite.
No, it's great to have you on board. Let's come back to the learning. I look at your profile on LinkedIn and you just have this like almost zealous passion for learning and driving learning. Where does that all come from?
So when I graduated high school, I was 20 years old. I was a grown man, you know, 6 months shy of my 21st birthday. And I remember, you know, when I walked across the stage to get my high school diploma, I was relieved, you know, that it was that part was finally over. But at the same time, I was embarrassed, you know, because here I am walking around across the stage with a bunch of 18 to 17 year olds. So it's not like I can really go out and, you know, I mean, my mother took me out to Applebee's and, you know, we had some family and friends come, you know, they were happy for me. But then at the same time, it was, you know, while I was happy, you know, it's still that embarrassment because you're a grown man, you know, you're walking across stage. And I remember after it was all said and done, it was not a matter of, okay, Luther, what is next? It was a matter of, Luther, you need to do something because you're a 20-year-old man and you're working at McDonald's. You were 313 out of 326 students. So you graduated at the bottom of your class. So I decided to join the Navy. You know, the little friends that I did have, and you know, what baffles me is one of my best friends, he was smart as a whip and he decided to go into the Navy. So I was like, you know, I don't want to go into the Navy. I don't want to be out on the water. That's the first thing I thought about. And I said, so I tried to go into the Air Force, but my test scores were too low for the Air Force. So the Navy it was, but I just remember being terrified of going to college when I first became active duty. I remember my mother said, don't get out the Navy until you have your master's. I'm like, did you not just see me walk across the stage as a grown man? You know, what's going on? What's wrong with you? But, you know, my mother has always been that type of person to believe in me, even when I didn't believe in myself. But the fire to start learning didn't start until probably like 2007, 2008. That's when, you know, you started seeing people getting forced out of the military, people who had done nothing wrong. These people, no misconduct. This was like when the economy started, you know, crashing. And of course, you know, us military folks, we have the good sense to say, you know what, we're not going to get out the Navy because this is our, you know, job security. But then the Navy had to start doing some foreshaping and some downsizing because, you know, they couldn't afford to just keep all of these people in. So my wake up call was when I saw people in my pay grade, because I was at E5 at the time with almost 11 years in, you know, they weren't getting approved to reenlist. And these folks had families and all they had was their high school diploma. And most of our skills that we learn in the Navy, unfortunately, they don't provide any type of equivalent certification. So a lot of our skills, unfortunately, are not transferable. Maybe a few like air traffic controllers, you know, they can go out and get a job right with the FAA because their certifications are actually civilian certifications. And the same thing with some of the dental certifications. But me, I was an aviation maintenance administrator. So I was a bookkeeper for inspections, in civilian terms. So that was like my wake up call. So when I finally got to San Diego, I said, you know, I'm going to go ahead and take a college course. And I kept, I was going to prolong it off till January, but Miss Gale did a performance test on me for English. And next thing you know, I'm walking out with this English book. And I'm like, what just happened here? Because I was, you know, and so long story short, I got my first A. That wasn't a PE or a cooking class. And that was an English comp. And so that just kind of sparked it for me. And I said, you know, one class turned into two classes. You know, the more I won, the higher my self-efficacy got, you know. So it went from four classes. You know, the goal was just to get an associate's degree in 4 years, because I just thought this was going to be the most daunting task that I ever did in my life. But then, you know, I said, let me just go and get my bachelor's. And then the bachelor's turned into the master's. And then within just the way the Navy works, we have seashore rotations. So the ideal is to be on when you go to shore duty, get your degrees. So I just, you know, I was able to get my associates, my bachelor's and my master's in one, one tour, because they offered a lot of accelerated courses. So I was just like, you know, I'm going to close the door on the partying, you know, because I had just moved to San Diego. So I had this idea that I was going to be going to LA every other weekend to party. But all of that went away. I just fell in love. I mean, it's just, I grew up with people telling me that I couldn't. And, you know, the one of the worst things that you can have happen to you as a child is an adult tell you that you're not going to be anything and you believe it. And so that was one of my situations growing up. The opportunity to make a liar out of a lot of naysayers was the driving force for me. And plus, I already knew what it was like to fail. I knew what it was like to not be, you know, I had already been there. Yeah. So it was time to move out of the realm of not be and never will into the realm of be and am. Even though I have the DR in front of my name, I still like to learn. And then one of the things that drives me to want to learn is because the requirements. One thing I found out early on in my Navy career that, you know, the requirements to, you know, the certifications and, you know, all of the learning that you do as a civilian is constantly evolves and changes. I mean, the way we teach and where the way DOL coaches teaching project management wasn't the way it was taught back in the early 2000s. And probably a year or two years from now, based off of what's happening in the industry, it's going to change again.
As humans, we're ever evolving organizations. You said something now, and I want to actually get Heather's input as a parent, Heather. You know, the idea about being naysayers, and I really resonate with that. I think I've referenced you in the past or maybe a previous program. I talk about the culture of no, right? When people say no when they could say yes. But then, you know, with parenting skills, you hear this today. We're telling kids that they can be anything they want to be, which is also sort of not realistic. What's your insights into that?
Well, I was listening to Luther talking about, you know, the spark that eventually, you know, when you start winning, you start wanting more, right? And I thought, I wish that more kids would experience that as their own internal motivation. I think that, so I have three kids and they're mm-hmm. aged 27, 25, and about to be 17.
You don't look like you have a 27-year-old.
Thank you. It's interesting to see how they're all different. And two of them grew up in a different time. You know, my 20-year-olds were super close in high school. They went to a really rural school. You were told that you could be a farmer, a homemaker, a nurse's assistant. You could work in pest control, or you could be in auto mechanics. And those were the tracks that you were on in high school. Ninth grade orientation, no lie, sitting there with my kids, the principal is saying, We believe that your student needs to go through a track of career education because a great deal of our students do not graduate with a degree, and therefore they need something to fall back on to function in our society. And I was like, you're setting these kids up for failure. You're assuming they're going to fail before they even get started in high school. Right. What does that do to someone's brain, right?
Right.
Like, I don't have to try that hard because I'm not going to pass because my principal already told me that. So when I look at that kind of culture, and then I listen to you, and you know, I grew up in New York State where everyone was after the Regents diploma and the extra credits and the extra scholarship money that you got for getting that Regents diploma for a state school. And like, it's just so different regionally in our country, but also, you know, now no one would tell Liberty at her school, you need to be on a career track because you're going to probably fail. Like, no one would say that now. People, I think, either know better or culturally we've evolved even in just 10 years, right? So I think it's a challenge. I think I would like to believe that the people growing up in our country today can say, I'm not going to be a naysayer. I'm going to be a supporter and an encourager because, you know, I believe in my community or my people or whatever. And, you know, that kind of goes back to an earlier podcast, Angus, where we were talking about community and culture. I just think things have changed. Like Luther said, they'll probably change again, but hopefully they'll change for the better.
If I may, Heather, I think the reason why, first and foremost, my mother would have did the exact same thing if a principal and has done it. And, you know, she plays a big role in my resiliency because when the other adults or the teachers said your son is this or your son will never be this, you know, she was the one with came back with the guns and said, you know, no pun intended. No, my son is not that. And my son will be this, even with straight F's. You know, on a report card, she always believed in me. But I will say that young people today are inclined to challenge what adults say. They don't, you know, when I was a child, I took what adults said to me, whether they were my parent or not, as gospel in some senses, where now that's not the case with a lot of young people today. They're not taking, you know, what heck, they're not going to take what I say as gospel, you know, despite all of my credentials, because, you know, the reason why they're not is because they know how to go get the information. So what they're going to do is they're going to validate whatever comes out of my mouth. They're going to go find it and validate what I say. And also, if you tell them that they can't and they won't, today's young people are more inclined to prove you wrong. You know, they are more inclined to prove you wrong. And as much as we want to complain about the millennials, I will give them credit for one thing. They're not a rollover play dead kind of people. You know, they're not going to stay in an organization. That's why organizational commitment is so important in today's society and today's organizations, because it's not like when my parents were my age. Well, you know, my age or in their 20s, where you stayed into one organization for X amount of years. If they're not happy and they're not treated well, they'll move on. They'll go look for better. And that's one of the things about young people today that I will give them credit for. They're always looking for better, even if it's the easy way out or what we'll perceive it as, oh, they're just taking the easy way out. It's like, no, they want to be treated better as, you know, young adults.
That's a really interesting segue into this generational challenge, because, you know, when you grow up, parents say, oh, it wasn't like that in my day. It was a lot tougher. I respect people who challenge the status quo. I think it's really important at any level. And I think to say that a whole generation does that is sort of a sweeping statement, because you know, I don't think we can really broad brush a whole generation. But so, Luther, you're in organizational development, and Heather, you run a lean organization. It's all about redefined and relevant. So when you look at a traditional organization like the military, like the Navy, or like a bank, or you know, something that's been around for a long time, and you get people say, well, actually, I expect to be treated better, and this isn't good enough. Where do you think that's going to land? Or it's like hot button topic in the news right now, isn't it? All the time. Right. Oh, we've got all these jobs, but these lazy buggers aren't going to take a job. And they go, well, hold on a minute. We do want a job, but we want to choose who we work with these days.
Well, I will say this, and this is just my theory based off of what, you know, just not, I have to be careful watching the news now because a lot of people are very emotional when they deliver the news. You know, it's not like when, you know, Ted Koppel, he just sat there and just delivered the news, or Connie Chung just delivered the news. Most news stations, whether it's on the right or the left, are very emotional with their delivery. So it's hard to really believe them, for lack of better words. But I will say, and I watched this on Trevor Noah, who I think is a very impartial person when it comes to his delivery. He talked about the great resignation during, I don't know if you guys saw that interview, but I thought it was a really good perspective. You know, COVID changed the game. You found out that you can do the same work that you're making me drive in a commute and get stuck in traffic for an hour and a half sometimes. I can do that same job in the comfort of my home with my own computer. And so what happened is that, one, people knew what it was like to not be in a toxic environment because they had to work from home. So you take the toxic environment out of there, the toxic leader or the toxic people, they're gone, because even if they call you and they're emailing you, you're still in the comfort of your own home. So that's that. And then also they realized, hey, I can still do my job this way. And I think that's why a lot of people are not taking jobs or, you know, that's part of the whole, I want to be treated better, is they want to work their way on their terms, if that makes sense, you know, and part of that is working remotely. Matter of fact, a lot of the jobs that I applied for when I was transitioning out of the Navy, there's one job in particular that I keep seeing on LinkedIn. They're having a really hard time filling it because, you know, the people want to work home. From home now, they want to work remotely. They want to spend time with their families. They want to be able to walk their dogs.
It's like the commercial on Amazon from Amazon that I saw the other day that said, I want to work 2 days a week. And the other person says, I can work full time, just not during the day. And the other person is like, and I want you to pay for my entire college degree. And then it's like, Amazon, we have a job for you. I thought, yeah, that's like what you're saying. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, some companies are waking up to and realizing that, hey, this is one of the situations where the employee has the upper hand. Because mm-hmm. there are some people that will gladly sit at home and figure out other ways to earn income rather than, you know, come into work and deal with a toxic environment. Don't get me wrong. If a job is, and I've even said this, you know, right now I work from home remotely, but I said I will not take a job where I have to go work in the office until it's something that I am passionate about. Right now, I only make 5 figures with my regular job, and I did that because after, you know, dealing with 23 years of, you know, up and down chaos in the Navy, you know, deployment, 6-7 months, you name it, 12 plus hours. I said, I need a woosah. You know, I need to know what it's like to not get a phone call after a certain hour. So for the time being, you know, I took a lesser paycheck just so I can have some peace. And I think that's what people value more than money. I think we're seeing a society where people are valuing their peace and their well-being and their health more than a paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Which is good, because, you know, with the decline in the economy and the rise in inflation, it's a good thing to be able to settle for less these days.
Hey, I'm glad I bought my house when I did, because mm-hmm. here in San Diego right now, I'm in a new development. So I paid, you know, obviously, you know, what I paid in my townhome, I could have bought a mansion in my hometown in Georgia. But now what's happening is it's turned into a bidding war where people are paying $70,000, $100,000 more for a house just to outbid the other person. So I'm glad I bought my house when I did.
It's crazy.
And I'm going to stay in this house for a very, very long time until the economy corrects itself. I'm in no hurry.
So let's fast forward then 10 years, because we spoke about social stability and economic stability there. Mm-hmm. And I think about this is quite interesting for me because I've never had a professional safety net. Living in the 80s, the UK almost went through some kind of civil war. Like if you're ever interested in Margaret Thatcher, and Heather, you are a change management guru. She was the ultimate change manager. She went in and changed the whole country. Now, even to this day, you speak to people and they go, "Ah, Margaret Thatcher," or "I love Margaret Thatcher." You know, she very polarizing, divided a whole country, right? But then by the early 90s in the UK, mid to late 90s, they were phasing out pensions, phasing out benefits for employees. So I've got friends my age, I go, "You're lucky, you've got a pension. You're like the last generation of pension. There is no invested stability moving forward from here." How do we match that with this desire for labor portability, the need for organizations now, particularly post-COVID, to respect this sort of need to, well, I want to be with my family, and you don't sort of come first as my employer. There has to be some kind of balance. And then this sort of sense of, I know we talk about psychological security, but also financial psychology and financial security. Mm.
I will use myself as an example. I was still active duty when COVID first hit. I learned that there were a lot of things that I could do without. Social circles, eating out every weekend, buying clothes every time I go out, once every 2 weeks shopping for Vans, which half of them I still haven't worn. I learned that there was a lot of things that I could do without. So I personally believe that if that's the revelation I caught during COVID, I think that's a lot of what a lot of people have caught, is they've figured out, I don't need all of these material things. And oh, by the way, I learned how to manage my money better. You know, because when you learn what you can do without, guess what? That's an extra $1,000 that you've saved a paycheck. So where before people were living check to check, you know, now they're figuring out how to make it work with, one source of income or, a pay cut, because they've cut out a lot of things that they don't need in their life. And that's just off of my personal experience. So I'm just going to assume that if that's something I went through and that's something I learned, then most likely there's other Americans out there that learned that same thing.
What do you think, Heather? Do you look at your kids and go, "Man, your life is just so cushy"?
No, this past 2 years has been such a struggle for all of us. I mean, to be a little personal and transparent, my daughter worked as a hairstylist. So she had just moved to Colorado to live in Denver, very expensive city, and start working as a hairdresser out here. And COVID hit literally 2 months after she started work in a new salon. And so she was in an apartment, paying rent, working, traveling, and then she was doing nothing. And that was such a challenge for her.
Right.
To be isolated in an apartment, no buses were running, her job was not functioning, for months. So she went through a lot of introspection and a lot of movies. But my son at the same time, he had just gotten out of the Air Force. He had just started going back to school, was looking for a new career. They moved across the country from California to Ohio last summer in the middle of all this, and still trying to find go back to work and do all this. What am I doing next? And struggling with the whole COVID thing. Like it's a big challenge. And so I just look at them and I think about, there's a lot of resilience that is able to be absorbed from surviving this experience. For me, even personally, I am identifying with what you're saying. I was laid off at the very beginning of COVID. We were furloughed and we were working reduced hours. Then they brought us back on because we already worked remotely. And then a couple of months later, they let go 22% of the workforce in one day. And that's like 850 people. And I was one of them. And there is no warning. I got up in the morning, I saw a calendar appointment on my calendar with HR, and I was like, crap, I know what this is going to be, because it's never a good thing when HR gets on your calendar. And by the end of the day, I was out of a job. And that, for me as a professional, I have never not worked since I was 16 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. And to have that taken out of your hands and out of your control and being said, we don't have any good reason for you. We're just laying a bunch of people off to save money. Good luck. And I was like,
no, wow. So,
but for me, you know, and I think for both of my kids too, this whole thing about having such a huge shift in your life was an opportunity to think about what is really important to me. And as you said, what can I live without? And what do I want to go after and focus on? And I just think it was an opportunity almost for a rebirth of who I want to be and what I want to be doing. And I love what I'm doing now. If I wouldn't have been laid off, I would never have gravitated towards DOL Coach, and I would never be living like, this is my dream job. I just love what I do. And yeah. I wouldn't have had that if that bad thing hadn't happened to me. And my daughter now is working in the salon. She's gotten 3 raises over 4 months. She's busy, happy, has a huge group of friends. She's so excited every day to get up and live her life. It's like, good things happen out of bad things. So I don't know.
Out of the ashes.
Out of the ashes. Out of the ashes.
comes the phoenix.
Yes.
You know, I will say this as far as, you know, the military spoils you. Even though we had that scare where they were forcing a lot of people out, for me, I never experienced that. But now that I'm a civilian, now I am cognitive of my mortality as a workforce person, you know, mm-hmm. someone that's out in the workforce. You know, when you're in the military and you've made it past the 15-year mark and you are, you know, you don't get in trouble, you keep your nose clean. You know, I made it all the way to senior chief petty officer. You know, you're immortal until you decide you want to end things. And so now that I have decided to end things, now I feel like a mortal. I feel like, you know, you ever seen that new Marvel movie, The Eternals? Like one of the people they made turned into a human. They say, hey, when you turn into human, you know, you're going to get old and you're going to die. And so now I realize, okay, now I'm on that same chopping block. Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Listen, I'm trying to learn my civilian, you know, jargon here. So yes, I'm expendable. And so I prepare for that. I prepare for that. So even though I get a retirement check and I get other things from the Navy, I don't look at that as extra money to spend. That is extra money to save and to take care of certain things. Mm-hmm. Because just in case I ever get that phone call, you know, that, hey, you know, I'm on HR's calendar, I still need to be able to live. That reality hit me the day after I, you know, they saluted me and I walked off. I was like, yeah, man, I could be fired for real.
It's quite a humbling experience, actually. Actually, the first time I got let go, and also the first time I had to fire someone, it's one of the most horrible things I've had to do. I mean, I think there's, as a leadership person, I've always said, if I'm going to fire someone, I'm not going to hand it off to HR. I will be involved in the process, because whilst HR are there for a reason, I think it's really important, if you're taking mm-hmm. someone's livelihood away, to tell mm-hmm. them and give them an
right.
And it's funny listening to you both speak there, because I'm just sitting here thinking, I would tie myself in knots keeping employees in the business and in the company and this was even before servant leadership or empathy was ever even a buzz phrase, because I felt
right.
I felt really accountable for their livelihoods, and that also resonated from having been in situations where you haven't got a job, you can't pay your bills. It's really interesting to see. So there's 2 things now that are thrown out at me. So you sort of get to pick your chapter. Is it, do we need safety nets for people? Is that socially and economically necessary or important? Or go down the path of opportunity from the ashes. Like, you know, the forest's going to burn down now and again, and we're just going to have to regrow the forest and live with it.
Well, I don't know if the companies are, if you're asking me, does the organization need to be responsible for these safety nets? That I don't know. I think that as adults, that's something we have to learn to create for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think hopefully COVID taught us all that lesson, that you need to have a safety net. You need to have that, oh, by the way, just in case something happens. Because I mean, 1 minute I'm reading and hearing about, you know, COVID overseas. And then the next, you know, one day I wake up and someone tests positive for COVID in an AT&T store here in San Diego. My sister comes out to visit me because, you know, my uncle had just passed. And so we were going to check on our cousins, and she gets, you know, she's in charge of a station at the airport, and she gets text messages that, you know, three people tested positive for COVID at the airport. So, I mean, within a matter of a weekend, I mean, it was just moving. And then next, you know, stay at home orders, you know, shutdowns, this and that. So if people didn't learn from that to create, you know, aside all the political fights and all of that jive that's happening, you know, that craziness that's happening in the world, we still have a responsibility for ourselves and to look out for ourselves. And I think safety nets, going back to our conversation, like, you know, we learned what we can do without. There's no need to now. We need to keep that mentality. We survived without these things for so long. Let's not go crazy and lose our minds and invite all of that stuff back in our lives and lose focus on what's important.
I think back to my nieces in the UK. So, you know, I didn't really see them grow up because I was overseas, and I speak to them a lot now. They're in their 20s and I hugely respect them, but they've gone through COVID and they've gone through Brexit, which might not mean much to Americans, but they've gone, hold on a minute, the EU and that big market, that big trade market, it's all we've ever known. And now that's being voted away. We no longer have a relationship with them. So our parents' generation or our grandparents' generation are voting something that we don't believe in. Then COVID's taken all the jobs. And you know, in the UK, there is some degree of welfare, but what's your point of view, Heather?
I think when Luther started talking, I immediately identified with the idea of creating your own social net or your own safety net, because I would have said the same thing. And I think that during this time, and I think it applies to any time, you have to know what keeps you feeling okay. For me, it was setting up weekly Zoom calls with different people. Like Sunday nights, I always met with one group of women. And then once a quarter, all of my girlfriends, we used to be a supper club. We would all get on Zoom and have happy hour and snacks together. And it was like something to look forward to and something I knew that I needed that. I cannot just self-isolate the whole time. So for me, building that safety net, but I'd had it before. I just had it in person. And it was like, I still need that. So let's make it work, right? So that was one, that's one piece. You know, and the financial piece is important, of course, building that safety net for finances. But having your people, I think, is super important. And so this is funny. So my boyfriend's oldest son was born the year of the Twin Towers collapse. And then he graduated right when COVID had happened. And something else terrible. And why can I not politically? What happened in 2020? What was the big thing?
The protest. Was it the protests?
I don't know. Anyway, it was a bookend for his career, his high school career, right? And he was like, yeah, I get to be the generation that grew up with this and then this, and now COVID, because COVID was like the third thing. So mm-hmm. I watched these kids. So I got to spend time in a blended family situation for 2 years. Our kids got to know each other as a family unit because no one was going anywhere. We were just together all the time. Yeah. And that is a huge blessing. So more fire from the ashes, more phoenixes from the ashes, if you will. But I don't know, Angus, I think people are crazy these days. Like mm-hmm. people are crazy. Yes. And they're either crazy in a bad way or crazy obsessed with something, or just crazy, like, I don't know what to do. My whole life has been out of control. And I really think that ability to be resilient again, but to have the capacity and the knowledge that I need to build this for myself and for my family really is driving us forward. And to go back to what we said a little bit ago, you know, about the new norms and what people believe and generationally and culturally and whatnot, I think this has been an experience for sure. And I'm almost not sad. I mean, that's a terrible thing, but I learned so much about myself and about my family and about what is really important through this whole thing. It is truly, there is a silver lining. And I know that this is not supposed to be a conversation about COVID. I'm sorry. We've both gone down that way.
Yeah, but it did something. Right. I mean, how can we not have a conversation about COVID? I mean, good God. I mean, we're talking about almost 2 years of it, you know, consuming our lives. And, you know, when it comes to me, if I'm going to talk about COVID, I will talk about how, you know, I just, you know, personally had to survive, you know, and make it through and do some self-reflecting, because there was a period, because, you know, I have my strong beliefs about certain things. So I had to check myself on social media. I had to check myself about a lot of things. My family had to check me, but I try to stay out of the political stuff, and just, like you said, Heather, you know, you do a lot of self-reflecting, and you make the best out of a bad situation. And it seems like, you know, the family thing has really been elevated, you know, for me, you know, most of my family was pretty much dispersed. So it was just myself and my one dog at the time, until I got a second dog. So, you know, thank God for my dog, because I would have gone crazy, you know.
That's the other good thing about COVID. All those dogs got adopted. Everyone has a dog now.
And believe it or not, a lot of people got, if you were going to school online, you know, I mean, people were knocking their degrees out left and right. I remember when I finally finished my proposal, we had to go through this thing called academic quality review just for the proposal phase. And they said that they are backed up. And the reason why they were backed up is because a lot of people were working from home now. So now you got time to, you know, get that proposal done, or, you know, go do your data collection. So I was like, shoot, this is a good thing. I guess it's a bad thing. But, you know, yeah.
You both got me going on something, really. I love the thought.
I like how we say stuff, and Angus is like, now, you know.
Because I think about innovation, and if you look at just Heather in the CPO course, the DOL, like, is innovative in its very birth. Right. Let's take a subject. Let's reframe how we educate it to people. And oh, bugger, there's COVID. You know what? Let's do it online and make it accessible. So now just look at that. DOL's innovated something that we've had people on the courses in different time zones, right, all across the world. And that to me fundamentally excites me, because I'm a big lover of accessible education. I really do think the whole world will be a lot better off if we make more education accessible to more people. That's one of my big soapbox issues. But not then in its short time frame, DOL's then gone and innovated again. Right, let's take that and create RPM. What we've discovered is people can't want to get it, but they can't get it. So let's make it video on demand and repackage it. So that's like two significant innovations in a half year. So Luther, where do you think the military could learn from DOL in terms of how to innovate like that? And Heather, getting you to predict the future, look in your crystal ball, what do you think the next major educational innovation could be?
Luther, you go first. Let me think about this.
Okay, so I actually posted a video of this on my social media, because ever since I have started, you know, while I was active, yeah, I was working on my degrees, but, you know, I didn't really focus on my certifications until close to retirement. So doing the project management thing always intimidated me, because I always, first thing came to mind is The Apprentice. You know, you're building a golf course, or, you know, trying to build a candy factory or something like that. And so I like how you all made it important. Project management is important, but you convey it in a way that, you know, you can relate it to, you know, simple terms. But as far as something that the military can take on, I actually posted a video about this, because we do in the military, we put a lot of emphasis, particularly in the Navy, on leadership development. You know, every time you make a rank, you got to go to some type of leadership class or some leadership pipeline. In order to make the next rank, you got to go through this class and leadership pipeline. But the more, the higher you get in rank, like once you get to like the E6, you know, E7, E8 level, the job becomes a lot more complex. Because whether you believe it or not, we do manage a lot of projects. Hence, you know, when I went through my assessment with DOL coach, you know, and it wasn't until just doing the basic CPO course, I realized, man, I've been a project manager at least 15 out of my 23 years. And it just took a matter of me just knowing the terms, you know, knowing how to use an org chart and all this other stuff. I posted a video on social media and I said that before chief petty officers or even senior chief petty officers think about going to the senior enlisted academy, that we need to incorporate some type of project management courses in our training pipeline. Because when I tell you that you're no longer doing conventional work as a senior enlisted person or even a senior officer, you when you make decisions and you're trying to execute projects and tasks, I'll even group those in the same, you got to understand the internal environment. You have to definitely understand the external environment. And you also have to understand stakeholder management. You also have to understand organizational structure, whether it's a functional relationship where you have a functional manager in charge, or if it's the project, you know, managers in charge, or you're dealing with a hybrid. Those are all the things that we deal with, but what we don't understand, we don't have no knowledge of the terms or the concepts unless you go through the CPO class, you know, like myself. You know, I operated as a project manager, but never knew any of the terms or the concepts. And had I known that back in 2013, when I was getting tasked by my executive officer, I could have pulled up that ROSI chart. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny that you say that because, you know, thinking about the future, we really do want to take over the world in project management. And mm-hmm. we've heard so much from people in the courses, Luther, like you said, that my whole unit needs this. The NCO course needs to include mm-hmm. Our basic instruction when we first come into the military should include this. So we are really crystal balling it. I'm thinking, you know, we're pushing into the military organizationally rather than individually. We're partnering with colleges and universities across the country to bring this to programs that help transitioning military folk, but we're also pushing into schools and community colleges and universities to offer this as a part of their business management track. We are going into organizations and changing the way that they work through our advanced organizational training. And I think this is like, I can see the water being sucked away from the ocean. And then pretty soon it's going to be this tsunami just crushing the world of project management and relevant training that makes what you do right. mean something. Because we do, Angus, as you're right. We have a culture of yes. We have a culture of empowerment. We have a culture of helping people. It aligns perfectly with my personal mission statement, is to help people grow personally and professionally using the skills and the tools that they already have. I mean, it's like DOL and Heather Coons. It's like we match visionarily. I love yes. that. So I'm excited to see what happens, but it's going to be good.
I'm glad to be a part of it. And what I like about DOL Coach, you know, is that we are focusing on people learning about project management versus studying just to take an exam to get a certification. We are actually teaching them about project management. So when they go through the CPO course or they do their PMAC, they can go back to their command and say, when they are tasked with something, let me go get that ROSI chart. I go that because I'm telling you that would have saved my life, like, you know, 8 years ago. Or let me build out this org chart of, you know, my project managers and what their responsibilities are, you know. So that's the difference between us and them. So as you guys can see, I'm a DOL coach champion already.
Advocate here, Heather. 10 years ago, I said, I want to help people get better. I don't, and you said earlier, Luther, I don't want people coming up through life to go through some of the pain thresholds I had to go through just to get to where I am. And, right. And there's no reason why they should. It's like, let's make things accessible. Let's enable people to be successful and succeed and just feel good about themselves. Because I don't think it takes away the challenges of life or the hardship of life. It just removes some obstacle to progress. Look at that huge passion for innovation and reforming education internationally there. So, Luther, what sets you on fire like that?
So for me, what sets me on fire is, again, you know, as an enlisted man, you know, until I have some more experiences as a civilian, I'm going to have to always go back to the Navy. But, you know, once upon a time, we just weren't expected to get education. So for me, what sparks me is something, I'm doing something that people didn't expect me to accomplish or do, you know, so that's what gets me going. And so now, because I feel like I have found the fountain of youth when it comes to learning, I want to write that map out for everyone else, you know, as they say, spread the wealth. So that's why, you know, with DOL Coach, every time there's an opportunity for a class, I'm posting it in all of my social media pages. I'm making sure the Navy knows, I'm making sure the Navy knows about these things. So for me, the spark is being able to share. So it's not necessarily about me just, you know, hoarding all, you know, getting all these certifications and just posting them on LinkedIn. It's all about sharing and making sure other people have a seat at the table. We're going to get some more tables. Right now there's a block table. And then when more people come, we'll add another square. And we'll add another square and we'll add another square. So make sure everybody can eat at the table. No one will be no one will be sitting on the floor. Everybody gets to sit at the table.
We're close to the end of this. So, and going back, closing the loop on something earlier, we talked about how whilst COVID was evil for a lot of people and has caused a lot of pain, but it allowed a reset. So to bring this podcast to a close, if you could press the reset button on something now, in the world, without worrying about any ripple effect, any negative impact, you just go, bam, I'm going to hit the reset button on that. And so people can start in that direction all over again. What would you hit the reset on?
So for me, I'll go a little further back before COVID. I just want to go back to a period where you could have you could disagree with someone without hating them or wanting to fight them. Or, you know, get them fired or cause them to lose their livelihood. I have a lot of friends, we disagree politically from politics to the vaccine, but I'm not trying to call their boss and ruin them. So I just want us to get back to that place where we can all just, you know, learn how to agree to disagree and not get in these debates where we're trying to convince the other person that we're right, but you know, debates where we can just understand each other's perspectives. So that's me. I want to reset back there. That's where I think we need to definitely reset as a world.
Luther, great having you on. And Heather, great having you on. You're both inspiring innovators.
Follow DOL Coach everywhere we go.
Yes. Yes. Follow us. We are doing a lot of great things. And with DOL Coach, you will learn about project management. And so much more. And many other things. But the most thing is you're not going to just come to us and take an exam and pass a test.
Just want to thank you both for your commitment over your livelihoods for a cause that's bigger than yourselves. You know, proud of you both and it's good to know you both.
Thank you. Thank you.